Hello and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we discuss leadership issues which have made the news outlets in recent days. This week, we're focusing on events up to the 15th of March 2019. My name's Nick Scott. I'm an economist and academic working with the Institute of Leadership and Management, and I'm joined today by the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Nick.
Her Majesty's Treasury marked International Women's Day by publishing research findings which paint a negative view of women's progress in entrepreneurship in the UK. Only one in three firms is run by women, and these firms are, on average, half the size of firms run by men. So, Kate, why are women lagging so far behind in this area?
I think before we start talking about a deficit and women aren't doing terribly well in this area, we could first perhaps explore some of the different reasons that women have for being self-employed. I did a lot of work with the Centre for Microenterprise, and we linked up with Italy and Sweden, and a lot of our research there indicated that women weren't as keen to grow as perhaps their male counterparts. There's other motivations for working in a business. And that's why we're so pleased to be working with the University of Birmingham's We Lead, the Centre for Women's Enterprise, Leadership, Economy and Diversity, because it asks more challenging and interesting questions about the nature of women's entrepreneurship and what women really want from starting, running and growing their own businesses.
The government's response is a new Investing in Women Code, which, in addition to requiring funders to publish an annual gender split on their business funding commitments, launches a new investment vehicle to increase funding to female entrepreneurs and also improve access to professional expertise for women. Are these measures going to be enough to make a positive impact?
We know that women do not have the same access to funds. And it reminds me of when Anita Roddick talked about starting the body shop and she had to take her husband back to the bank in order to get a loan. These sorts of statistics suggest that not much has changed since then. With any sort of reporting, codes of conduct, it shines a spotlight on existing practice now and enables us to set targets and ambitions for how we'd like things to be. And we certainly would like to see more women running more successful, bigger and flourishing businesses in the UK.
Later in the podcast, we will hear from Institute companion Nick Bradley, entrepreneur and scale-up specialist, who'll be offering advice to those entrepreneurs keen to grow their own business. Our second story notes that Headhunters Robert Walters has launched a mental health awareness drive amongst its 400 workers based around the number 60. Set a target to achieve something in 60 seconds or 60 minutes, or take 60 attempts at something. This number 60 recognises the number of men who take their own lives every hour around the world. Previous research by the same company found that 88% of workers considered an employer's mental health strategy a vital factor when looking for a job. Yet only 51% of employers actually have these strategies in place. So, Kate, what can inexperienced employers do to help develop a mental health strategy?
I think of all the campaigns that we've been involved with, the one about raising awareness of the need for mental health support in the workplace has been absolutely terrific. We've been working with BITC and other partners since 2016, annually publishing a survey that gives an insight into the level of mental health awareness. But most importantly, it's also enabled a set of resources to be developed that are freely available to any organisation. So those companies who realise that they need to be doing something about mental health have free information there on the BITC website. There's also information on our own website, so please do access that. But what we also have to remember that resources are fine, but there needs to be time allocated, an investment in essence, in making those resources used, known about, and very importantly, that line managers, the first people often to notice differences in people's behaviours, to be the link between HR, the sorts of support that exists, and the employee who might be experiencing mental health difficulties. And I think what I'd like to really emphasise is that the cure is not to give people time off work and let them know to come back when they're better. Work is so often an important part of that getting better, and we need managers who are able to support, make special adjustments, do whatever it takes to enable those people to speak openly about their mental health issues, but to continue working while they're dealing with them.
A recent Virgin Atlantic blog highlighted their Scarlet Network, an employee network founded to boost the career prospects of female staff, in part by encouraging staff through support and development by accessing knowledge from all corners of the organisation. However, a recent article on the Strategy and Business website raised some doubts about the effectiveness of these networks, noting that the successes or otherwise of these networks is rarely measured or evaluated, and asks the question, without hard data to measure these networks, how do we know in what way they may be being effective?
Well, the immediate response would be they probably aren't, because if the majority of senior positions in organisations are held by men, it's access to those networks that women need if they see those as an important vehicle for advancement. But our International Women's Day webinar was with Yasmin Sheikh, a campaigner for diversity in the workplace, and she suddenly became a wheelchair user at a time when she had no disabled friends, and she did talk about her reluctance to join disabled groups. But when she did, she found being with other people who get the problems, who understand the barriers and the difficulties you face, is hugely helpful and supportive. So there is a role for women's networks. But as Simone Roche, a companion of the Institute and founder of Northern Power Women, always advocates, to make real change in organisations, you have to have everybody on board. If you make it a women's problem, it won't be solved. It's the organisation's problem. We heard last week about Virgin announcing that their female cabin crew no longer have to wear makeup, and it does make you think, rather like Anita Roddick trying to access finance in the 80s, how, with these such outdated views still being enshrined in company policy, can that be considered a real climate where women are going to flourish in advance? We know that there are inequalities in the airline industry, and I think I prefer to see campaigns to encourage more girls and young women to think about ambitions to be pilots, rather than to be worrying about whether they should or shouldn't wear skirts, trousers or makeup.
Finally, as promised, Nick Bradley, companion of the Institute, on the significance of vision for entrepreneurs looking to scale up the business.
The reason I start with vision and values is the person who starts a business, the entrepreneur who has that great idea, is generally really, you know, creative, motivated. They often lose their way when they need to take the business from one place, which is obviously that startup phase, to something which is significantly different in terms of what it's trying to achieve. So that scale up is often a different mindset. And the starting point of that is understanding, you know, the vision of what you're trying to achieve with your business at that point. And, you know, it can be different. It can be different from what it was when you started the business. It changes when you're going to scale up because you need to systemize and you need to bring processes in. And sometimes that's just not a natural thing for certain types of entrepreneurs to get their head around. So vision for me is a connection with, A, why you started the business in the first place and where you want to take the business in the end. And a lot of the times I find that when, you know, a founder reconnects with that vision and can see kind of a clear view of kind of, hey, I started the business for this reason and now I know where I want to take it, there's a lift in their energy, there's a lift in their excitement, there's a lift in just generally how they lead. And that same level of energy that they had at the very beginning starts to come back.
Well, thanks to Kate and Nick Bradley for his advice from his Scale Up Your Business podcast series. We'll be back with more next week. But in the meanwhile, please visit the website www.institutelm.com to find out more about the Institute of Leadership and Management.